ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present the Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of the Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, big down? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I am Branham, it's Sean Mapes.
Weird.
We're interrupting his afternoon nap behind the glass. Yeah, somebody said that you get afternoon naps, Mapes.
Less afternoon naps nice. Now that I work till 3.
We were blasting you on our show the other day. Oh, I'm surprised. It's my understanding that you chose to work this shift as opposed to other shifts. So thank you for that. I'm surprised you did that after we were critical of you last week for one of the sound bites that you linked or copied or whatever. Yeah, we were critical of you. So thank you for working, even though we were critical of you.
What sound bites did I
think you pulled one from somebody's phone as opposed to just going to the website and grabbing the highlight type of deal. So it didn't sound good. Yeah. And then Brian played it on our show. I'm like, what is happening?
Oh, and
here?
Then Brian immediately and then, pointed the finger.
And then I'm a diva, so I was like, what's happening?
Jeremy
and,
dragged you.
I did.
For quite a while.
Okay.
I did. I did drag you for quite a while. Kind of like the Texans offensive line was being dragged for quite a while yesterday to the tune of 8 sacks. They were sacked 8 times in a single football game. This reminded me, like, this is not that unusual for Houston Texans football. I don't know the amount of sacks. But we've lived through David Carr. We lived through Deshaun Watson taking tons of sacks. So if any fan base knows what it's like to take a bunch of sacks in a football game, it's the Houston Texans. You just wished and hoped that it wouldn't be this year. It wouldn't be with C.J. Stroud, who might be the most talented quarterback that has ever played in Houston Texan franchise history. That was hard to watch. On top of the 8 sacks, 11 quarterback hits on top of that. And Stroud was limping and barely getting up multiple times.
I'm done, Jeremy. I'm done. I'm done being the guy that's going to be patient and believe in what the coaches say when they say that, you know, everything from when it started with the penalties, from the illegal procedures to the false starts, we got this. We're taking it under, you know, our wing this week at practice. It'll be fixed. It's behind us. You know what? Then it was Kenyon Green, and Kenyon Green was in the crosshairs, and he had the lowest rating across the league on Pro Football Focus and all the different things that, oh, but we're good, and Kenyon's going to be good, and going forward, he's going to be better. After last night, I'm done. And the fact of the matter is, it's not just Kenyon Green anymore. Laremy Tunsil's getting his doors blown off. And Titus Howard can say that they were the better team, but he didn't play like he knew what the hell he was doing as one of the higher-paid right tackles in this league. Across the board, the offensive line was putrid. It was hideous. It was ridiculous. It was an embarrassment. And it was exposed for all of the nation to see instead of just what we are blessed to see every single week with this team. And it's got to change. It's got to change. And you know what? Again, for the second straight year, Kenyon Green will have an injury to be what they will say is probably the end of his season, because I don't expect him to be back from this regardless. But after what happened last year and the debacle that was, and then having to hear all the different things that he was going to be better this year, he has been anything but that. He has been an embarrassment. He is awful. And they have got to do something to fix it. And they have a little window of time now, but they need to do it now.
Yeah, I think they need to treat this a little bit like a bye week. Like, you see changes a lot of times in the NFL after bye weeks because they have a little bit more time to implement things as opposed to, like, the rat race of what is the NFL season and week to week. So I do think they need to treat this like a bye week and make changes. Plus, they're going to be forced to. Their left guard's out for the year. So you're going to be forced to make changes. You have no choice. Now, you said you're...
That's official?
Kenyon Green?
Yeah.
Ian Rappaport tweeted out that he has a dislocated shoulder, will be placed on IR. He initially tweeted he's out for the year, and then he hedged 4 minutes later and said that there's a chance he could come back late in the year, which you're going to use one of your returns on Kenyon Green. Like, I have a hard time believing that if Kenyon Green put on tape what he's put on tape this year, that he would be an option to be one of your designated to returns off of IR. So, yeah, it looks like he's probably done it. There's a lot of people saying he's played his last snap as a Houston Texan, which is incredibly unfortunate. And I know that we're banging on the guy today, but you did use a first-round draft pick on him. And if you want to be a winning franchise, you shouldn't be missing out on first-round draft picks. And I don't want to do the whole Kyle Hamilton was there when you decided to trade down thing today. But yeah, it is unfortunate. And I do hate that his last two seasons have been derailed by injury. Like, if you're going to be a bum and lose your job, okay, that's one thing. I hate for guys to get hurt, especially whenever they're local guys and play for the local professional team. Now, you mentioned being done. Mm-hmm. Like, what does that mean, though? Because, like, like, yes, everybody's upset with the offensive line. Yes, they were putrid yesterday. Yes, they were abysmal. But what does being done really look like?
To me, it looks like you've got to make changes. You've got to find answers. And you've got now a head start on the trade deadline on Tuesday because you are now done playing until after the deadline. And you need to start looking all across the league and trying to figure out who's available, how can I upgrade, and what can I do? I mean, there's the drastic side of things, and there's one guy that's out there in regard to that. If you want to look at a guy like David Bakhtiari, who's out there, but he played left tackle his whole career, and he's aching to play, but he's a veteran that's been an all-pro. He's out there, but I don't think that's the answer. There are other guys that are out there that you need to kick the tires on to figure out who's buying, who's selling, but Nate Davis is there in Chicago. He makes $8 million a year. You'd probably owe him roughly $4 million. The Bears are willing to pay for some of that. He should be a guy that you should be absolutely picking up the phone and calling Chicago on and seeing what it takes to get it done. Because you have some time. As you mentioned, it's almost like a bye week to where you could get them acclimated. You could get guys in here. But I'm done with being okay with and accepting the whole premise of they'll figure it out at practice. Like, they're going to get better at this. It's going to get better. CJ's going to get killed. And what we saw last night and the amount of hits and pressures and the fact that it started to look like he had PTSD and it's gotten worse and that he's getting dinged because of the fact that they're saying he's taking a step back because of how bad this situation is. They got to fix it. This roster's too good. There's too much talent here for you to sit there and say that you're not going to try and do everything you can to upgrade and fix this offensive line so that you can come out of this mini bye with a much better chance to keep your quarterback upright and your offense can get some points on the board.
Yeah. Like, none of those names really excite me. Like, you mentioned the guy from Chicago who's been bitched, Nate Davis. Yep. Like, Bakhtiari, you're right. Like, he's a tackle. Like, I don't think that you're... Like, if you're making a move at tackle, you're probably just playing Blake Fisher at right tackle.
Yeah, you're not going to...
Not a guy that you're picking off the street. Like, you're probably playing Fisher at right tackle and moving Titus Howard to left guard and let him cry on Twitter and be upset if he has Twitter. He says he got rid of it. He probably has a burner. Now, I believe that Nick Caserio is looking across the league. Like, he's a willing-dealing son of a gun. He makes lots of trades. He's already made one trade. I think saying that the Texans, like, if not that you are specifically doing this, but if anybody's out there is saying that Nick Caserio needs to do this suddenly, I think that'd be foolish. Like, Nick Caserio's always looking. Nick Caserio's made two transactions in the last, 3 weeks? He traded Cam Akers. He signed Devin White. Nick Caserio's always tinkering. He's always looking. And there's even been reports that he's been talking to teams about offensive linemen. Now, some reports were him trading Kenyon Green. But you have to imagine if he's toying with the idea of trading Kenyon Green, that he's probably also toying with the idea of acquiring somebody. So I can say with high level of confidence that Nick Caserio is looking. Nick Caserio is always looking. And I think that every general manager should always be looking. If you're a general manager that isn't looking at all right. times to improve your football team, then you are a terrible general manager and you're literally not doing your job. It'd be like a sports radio host showing up at 4 o'clock on a 3 to 6 show. Like, that is their job, is to always be looking.
But the thing is, I guess I'm not saying he should be looking. I think the urgency, the level of urgency to do something and to make some moves to try and do whatever you need to do to bring in some alternatives, I think it has to be done. I think everything is on the table. I think you have to start looking where we started a long time ago, and DeMeco kind of wanted to deflect you from it, in that we got to look at the coaching staff. You got to look at the way that they're coaching up. The fact that we're still this many weeks into the season, and we're talking about, well, how do you defend against stunts? And how do you make sure that the communication across the offensive line is preventing some of the all-out bull rushes that he's getting and they're getting and they're giving up? And you have to go, you know, obviously Bobby Slowick is going to get a lot of criticism because of play calls and how that factors in, and especially when your offensive line is less than the way that you can try and move the pocket, get the quarterback out, do some different things to try and make it a little easier on him. But overall, from a personnel standpoint, it's not just about kicking the tires. I think he's got to try and get some deals done. And I think that, you know, the problem is a lot of the guys in the division, a lot of teams in the division aren't going to be willing to help you, because Jacksonville with Scherf is out there. But there's, I don't think that Jacksonville is going to consider trying to help you out.
Yeah.
So, that, you know, you got to figure out who's selling to and who might be out there. There are some guards out there. But there has to be something done to upgrade the offensive.
Yeah, and not to nitpick, but I can, again, tell you with a high degree of confidence that Nick Caserio is trying to get a deal done.
I don't think he's – I'm not denying that he's trying. I just think the urgency level has to be to where it – now it's not just trying. Something has to change.
But you don't think it was already there? You don't think it was already there, the urgency?
I think internally they thought that they could fix all this. I think that internally, and they also, I also believe that they felt like the entirety of their offensive line roster was good enough because of the interchangeable parts, if you want to move Juice or Patterson, that they had enough guys in the building already.
They were thinking that Wednesday that before they played this game yesterday?
Well, I mean, if you're still throwing Kenyon Green out there as a starter, and granted the concussion to Patterson had something to do with it, but if you still thought, if you were thinking that there was urgency in the building, I wouldn't have started him last night.
Yeah, see, I think that the best answer, unless there is like a better offensive lineman that is out there that Nick Caserio will try to acquire, is probably Jared Patterson. Now, like if you're looking at wholesale changes and you're talking about let's treat this like a buy, and like I'm not usually somebody that likes to make changes for the sake of making changes, because I think a lot of times whenever you're making changes for the sake of making changes, you're actually going to a lesser player. You're going to an inferior player. But a lot of times when you make changes, you also kind of get this revitalization from your troops. Like everybody kind of gets fired up. It's like, okay, we're pressing the reset button, and I think this Texans offensive line needs a big reset button. I think that Jared Patterson, of those that are available and healthy, assuming that he will be healthy against Detroit, and he should be, I think he's one of your best five offensive linemen. Now, I think where the drastic change comes, because I've heard some drastic, oh, Blake Fisher, right tackle, move Titus Howard to left guard. I'm not there yet. I'm not going to rule out the possibility of eventually getting there, but not yet. To me, if you're making like a drastic change, we're not talking trade, which I'm not opposed to trade whatsoever, so don't get that twisted. I think you tried Jared Patterson at center. And like, okay, are these coverage calls and what we're supposed to be doing on this offensive line and what our keys are, is that something that a second year, I know Jared Patterson's also in the second year, but is that something where Juice Scruggs is struggling, that he's putting us in these bad positions ahead of the snap that are a big reason of why you're getting tons of pressures? Jared Patterson, like the offensive line last year was nowhere near as talented as this year's offensive line.
Right.
But last year's offensive line was way more productive than this year's offensive line. Maybe not in the run game, but the run game is like, okay, we know what we're supposed to do before the snap. We're not really changing a whole lot in terms of like audibling or changing our keys. But in pass protection, it's all the way up to the snap. Okay, we're going to be here. We're going to be there. And they are very much struggling with that. Laremy Tunsil had a quote after the game yesterday about the 8 sacks, Aaron Wilson, courtesy. It's the same thing that happens every week. Overload, twist game, blitzing, same thing we see every week. I think we just got to be better, which, okay, stock answer. That does really nothing for me. But let's see. If you can change the center, and Jared Patterson was fine in this role last year, if you change the center, maybe the coverage gets better. So I'm all for the idea of trying that. Do I think Juice Scruggs is better at center than guard? Yes, unless he's really struggling with the coverage calls. So if it's an internal option, again, not opposed trading, I would try Jared Patterson at center to see if that helps.
So you're moving Juice to the guard now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I was going to say, the thing that we talked about, which is why I don't want to see Blake Fisher out there. I just don't think he's ready yet. I don't think at either tackle position he is an answer, and I don't think he gets better. Because I think, to your point, I don't think I'm making changes just for the sake of making change. I need changes that are going to be done to make this offensive line better. If it's that, that's where we start, fine. But you have a short window of time before the deadline, too, where I think moves have to be made. I highly doubt there's anybody on the street that's going to be brought in at this time of the year that's going to be anything better than what you have and be in the condition you need them to be in. So I don't need to do things for the sake of change and then make it worse, because I think Fisher makes you worse.
Now, I'm not opposed to a trade, but at the same time, a trade takes two to tango. You can try your darndest and you can't get a trade done. I really want Shohei Ohtani on the Astros. I'm going to try everything I can do, but it's not going to happen. So it takes two to tango on that front, takes two to make a trade. That isn't always a guarantee. So if you're looking at making this offensive line better, you have Detroit on Sunday Night Football, another chance to be really exposed from your offensive line on national television. You thought Amazon Thursday Night Football was bad. Wait till Sunday Night Football comes if you get exposed there. Now they're playing at home and they're a different team at home versus on the road. But if it's internal, and you know that Kenyon Green's done for the year, and Pro Football Focus grades had Kendrick Green that was worse than Kenyon Green in the time that he was into the game, what is the internal option for you?
The internal option for me is twofold, and that would be that if you're going to look at doing something drastic, but that worked, again, last season, then two things that worked last season were, one, when you did move Howard over to the guard position, he held his own. The problem is, now you've got a problem at right tackle, and I don't have a solution for that. So the better solution is, until he got hurt last year, Patterson was capable of playing center for you, and you didn't seem to have any kind of problems, and that was with him as a rookie. So if you want to put him at center and then move Juice to left guard, I'm fine with that. Because I think that Juice wasn't great either at left guard, but I think that he's capable of holding his own. And if he has less to worry about, less on his plate, less about dealing with coverages and snap and all that other thing, all the other things, and he can just focus on being a guard, I think that they can start there as a possibility of getting some kind of improvement. But I really believe that I'm looking for something outside of the building that could possibly upgrade this offensive line.
No, I am too. I'm just saying if that doesn't happen, what is the internal option? Tuesday will be fun. Tuesday's the NFL trade deadline. 8815, Patterson played a great center last year for 6 to 8 games. I think that's what you have to try here. It's like, okay, let's hope that our offensive line issues or the coverage calls pre-snap. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. We're on the Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. We're on the YouTube at ESPN Houston. We're on the Twitter at ESPN975. Blankers at Pac-Man. Joel, I'm at Jeremy Branham. DJ Bieniemy will be joining us later. Does this offensive line just hate C.J. Stroud? I've seen a lot of people discussing that. I do have a bone to pick with D'Amico Ryans. I have a bone to pick with the head coach of the Houston Texans. And we usually, I mean, Texans have won more games than they've lost this year, twice as many games as they lost. And usually we do not ignore in victory what we wouldn't in defeat. We will not ignore in defeat what we wouldn't in victory. Well, we'll take a look at some of the positives the Houston Texans had. 713-780-3776, HRP listener line. Bobby Slowick, we got to discuss this play that Bobby Slowick ran in the fourth quarter yesterday. And I know a lot of people want to say some things about Bobby Slowick, so here's your chance. 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Guys, before we go to the break, a word for Allstate Siding and Windows. Look, Allstate Siding and the Windows, they are going to help you every step of the way when you're considering doing things to upgrade and protect your biggest investment. And for most of us, that's our house. They do a phenomenal job. Everything from front doors. My wife now is really focused on front doors, and she wants to look at front doors. You can find them at Allstate Siding and Windows. But the things that they are absolutely everyday specialists on is exactly what's in their name. And it starts with what we did a little over a year ago when we changed out the windows in our house. It gives you phenomenal curb appeal from the minute that they make the change. But the bigger and better thing is it's going to reduce your energy bills between 30 and 40% for a lot of people like it did us. It's going to make sure that your windows are your best protection when hurricane season hits. And the fact that whether it's the steaming heat of the summer or when it gets really cold occasionally in the winter, the elements are going to stay out and your home is going to stay comfortable in the exact climate that you want it to be, because they know what they're doing and they give you free estimates, and that's where everything begins. Get a free estimate. Have them come out to your house. Whether you're looking for siding, windows, or both, have them just explain to you what are the best products that they offer for your particular house and structure. You're going to learn a lot. You're going to see a lot, and in the process, you're going to probably start to really consider a lot about how you can upgrade your house. 30% off all windows right now, $2,500 off a siding job. Free estimates are available. Call them today, 832-204-1936. That's 832-204-1936. Get a free estimate. It costs you nothing, and it may be a game changer in terms of how much money you can save. They have discounts for senior citizens, military, and first responders. Start the process today. Go to AllstateSidingAndWindows.com.
ESPN 97.5.
I assumed you knew.
You found the killer bees live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
713-780-ESPN. 8 sacks yesterday, 11 quarterback hits. Reminded you of the days of Carr, Watson. You know the top three pressure rates in C.J. Stroud's career have each been in the last 3 weeks?
Yeah.
The top three. Every single pressure rate on C.J. Stroud's podium have been in the last 3 weeks. That's insane. That's an incredible number. Quinnen Williams and Kenyon Green, second biggest mismatch of the day. He had no chance against
Quinnen Williams. I had serious reservations going into that game about what Quinnen Williams can do against a guy like Kenyon Green. When I saw that first half,
so bad.
it was like when you get that one kid in the 12 and under Pee Wee football league that had the growth spurt first, and he goes like 150 pounds, and everybody else is in Pee Wee, and it just, oh my goodness, he was steamrolling him and just ragdolling him. It was embarrassing.
He didn't have a chance. And, like, we knew that before the game. So, like, I don't know. Maybe give a running back over there to help him out a little bit.
Chip.
Just an idea. Maybe line up a tight end to the left side of Tunsil. Maybe Tunsil can help out a little bit. I'm not an offensive line guy. I'm not a Zerline. But I think it'd be a better strategy. I think it would. I don't know.
Like, we talk about what CJ, the potential for CJ to have PTSD with all the rush he gets. When you looked at Kenyon Green and some of those plays when they slow-mo'd him and what his eyes looked like he was scared to death on every play, and that he knew that as soon as the ball was snapped that someone was going to absolutely embarrass him.
Yeah, it's rough. All right, 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Christian Javier, you're in the Hive with the Bees. What's up?
Hey, guys. How's it going? Thanks for taking the call.
What's up?
You know, I've been, listening to y'all's program for a long time. Pretty sure y'all have listened to me, continue to complain about the same thing. But, we're not going to go anywhere. And, you can look at some of the best teams in the NFL. You have to have the offensive line to protect your number one asset, which is your quarterback. I was watching the games last week, and I was counting the seconds that it took Lamar to get a pass on, and the time that it took Mayfield to get a pass on. They had at least 4 seconds. We can't even give CJ 2 on him at least half of these plays. So it's utterly ridiculous. We got to do something. Probably nothing this year, but that time that he went down and my heart almost jumped out of my chest because I thought we lost him for the season because they pancaked him and he did not get up very quickly. That should be a wake-up call to Coach D'Amico. We got to get something done quick because if not, we're going to lose CJ for the rest of the year, maybe even next year. Hopefully not, but thanks, guys, for taking my call.
Appreciate the call, man. Look, obviously, everybody's priority focus is the fact that we know the line sucks, but the bigger thing is I felt what he felt, what Javier felt. I felt when CJ went down and just stayed down for a second, your heart skips a beat because you're like, we talk about it, we dread it, we don't think it's really going to happen, but yet it's always in the front of our mind. And then when it actually happens and he's laying on the ground and you're like, your entire season sits right there on that bad turf, lying there because it hasn't been fixed. Yeah, you just don't want to see that the rest of the season.
Yeah, I read the body language pretty well there. I knew he'd be back into the game. CJ Stroud.
Even when he stayed a little longer than you thought?
It was more than once, too. I know the specific play he's talking about is the one where he got hit right in the shin.
Right before the end of the first half?
I don't remember the timing, but it was the one where he was down for a while. Yep. I think it was the end of the first half. Yep. But he came back, because I think he came back to nil it, right? Yeah, it was late in the first half. He came back into the game to put it on a knee, and it's like, okay, well, if he's coming back into the game to put it on a knee, they don't think it's too bad to allow him to return. Although they did allow Will Anderson to return on a gnarly-looking ankle. Like, it's a little surprised they let him back into the game.
Hey, Joe Mixon did. He can do it, too.
I know, and then Mixon missed 4 weeks or whatever it was. And then same thing with Azeez Al-Shaair, which we kind of need to question the Texans' return-to-play procedure during game days, by the way. Like, they had Azeez Al-Shaair return to a game. He's missed, what, is it 2 weeks now?
Yep,
back-to-back weeks. Hopefully he'll be able to play Sunday against Detroit. They allowed Mixon to come back into the game. He was out three or four weeks. I can't remember exactly what it was. They allowed Will Anderson to come, and he was noticeably limping. And if you watch the replay of it, too, it's like, okay, well, everybody knows that's not the way the ankle's supposed to go. You can kind of recover when the ankle goes inward. Mm-hmm. When the ankle going outward, that's usually a high ankle sprain. That's usually a good 3 to 6 week injury,
quite
frankly.
Did you see, too, because I was thinking about you on that one, that the fact that he was doing the same kind of exercises on the sideline that Joe Mixon was doing before they sent him in.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, God, I already know where Jeremy's going to be on tomorrow.
No, and I mean, look, I admire Will Anderson's toughness. Don't get me wrong, because the player needs to be a tough guy. And, hey, I can get back in there, and I admire that. Because I always look at those injury situations as I put my feet into the shoes of the head coach. Like, what would I do in that moment? And knowing that I'm 6-2, knowing that field's terrible, I'm going to try to go look at a tablet to see what the injury looked like, if possible, if I can do that, or maybe they had it on the replay. If I were in the shoes of D'Amico, there is no chance. I would tell Will Anderson, Will, love you. I love your toughness. I really appreciate you trying to get back into this game. This isn't the Super Bowl. This isn't a must-win game. This isn't a playoff game. You go get rested. Hopefully we get you back for Detroit. And eventually they got there. Eventually they got to that point. But they let him back into the game with that ankle roll? It wasn't even an ankle roll. It was kind of like somebody fell into his ankle.
See, and I think that this goes back to when we had the discussions even about Mixon, in the fact that at that point when the game's going on, there's no chance that D'Amico has all the intel that he probably needs to make that call. And from a training staff perspective, once the doctors clear him medically, then that's the message they're going to send to their head coach regardless. And you're right. When you think about the big picture of, as we talked about, you're going to have an extended amount of time off after the game. You're coming off of a game right into another tough game to where you're playing two games in a condensed four-day period of time. Everybody's still sore from last week, so that makes it even worse and compounds everything. Anytime a lot of these guys were getting, you know, in that position, you got to think about the bigger picture from the standpoint of once you get by this, then you can give him more a really legit longer chance than any other time of the season other than the bye week to get right. But if you go out there and he gets extensively worse, it'll take you right through, you know, the 10 days or whatever you have off and more.
Yeah, I didn't like that he was going back into the game from a big picture view. From a Will Anderson view, I admire your toughness. Love that you're a tough guy.
There's no John Gernard.
That didn't look great.
No.
And we do know that he's got weak ankles. We know this about Will Anderson. Will Anderson missed most of training camp this year with what? A bad ankle. What did Will Anderson miss a couple of games with at the end of last year? A bad ankle. Will Anderson's a bad son of a gun. He's a bad man. AFC Defensive Player of the Month. But he's got ankles like Steph Curry. And that scares me. That's why I'm not allowing him back into the game. One thing that Javier did say about the offensive line and what you were talking about with the offensive line, too. My biggest concern is I don't think that you can make this tremendous stride in offensive line personnel in the middle of a season. Unless you're welcoming back like a guy who's been injured, like a game changer. There's not going to be a game changing offensive line on the trade market. You don't have a game changing offensive lineman on your bench. There's not a game changing offensive lineman, you know, in free agency. Yes, you should be trying to aspire to improve it 100%. But do I think that anybody that you acquire or promote or sign is going to be night and day the change, the knight in shining armor that what fixes this offensive line? Ain't no way. It's got to come from within, like coaching, scheme. That's got to improve.
And that's
or maybe
I,
a center.
But that well, and that's where I was leaning too. Something has to be addressed with the coaching staff then too. Because especially when you have a little bit of time here with a break where you can really kind of, you know, have a clean break from what you've been doing and hasn't been working to try and start trying to do something differently. It's a lot of times why you see some of these teams in the middle of the season give the play calling to someone else on their staff because the offensive coordinator is struggling and he's not figuring things out. If you want to keep him on the staff, fine, but figure out someone else that has a different technique and some other ideas as to how you better the continuity on your offensive line, regardless of the personnel, which also has to be highly, highly inspected and changed wherever possible.
The issue that I have with that, it's not so much an issue, it's more of a question. Why were they okay last year with the terrible offensive line? So that makes me think it's not a coaching thing. Because if the same coach that was here a year ago, Chris Strauser, was able to take this patchwork offensive line and actually protect C.J. Stroud to have one of the best rookie seasons of a quarterback in NFL history, C.J. Stroud last year was sacked a total of 38 times the entire year. 15 games, 38 times. You know how many times he's been sacked this year? Take a wild guess.
29.
Close. It's 30. He's been sacked 30 times in 9 games. He was sacked 38 times in 15 games last year. The offensive line coach is the same. So, like, he's a common denominator here. What's an uncommon denominator? A few of the guys that you have on the offensive line. I don't think that Chris Strauser can go from being an offensive line coach with a patchwork offensive line that does a pretty good job with that patchwork offensive line to being abysmal with this offensive line.
Some
that's
of it's
not
personnel
coaching
too,
to me.
Right? Because some of it is the personnel that's missing. You had Fant last year. You had some guys that were capable when you moved them around, and they were interchangeable because they could play multiple positions. And even when Patterson went out, and then you finally got Juice back, but you were able to take guys that were, you know, that were in some time in certain cases were, you know, not all-star level players that were just veteran and, you know, journeyman NFL guys that you moved and found a way to win with. But now that you've spent all this money in this draft capital and whether you were told that you had to start certain guys or not, it's obviously that's the biggest difference is the guys that, in the case of even a Fant, was the fact that he wherever you played him, he seemed to be at least serviceable.
Yeah.
You don't have serviceable on the left side right now, and center might be part of that, but the left guard has been the major issue.
Look, they're all a problem, right? Like Bobby Slowick's play calling with a bad offensive line is a problem. Strauser's the offensive line coach behind what has been a bad offensive line. That's a problem. The personnel on the offensive line has allowed this to happen. That's a problem. C.J. Stroud is even a problem, whether he's helping out Juice Scruggs in coverage calls or he's not getting rid of the football quickly. Tight ends, running back, they're all part of the problem. The operation is screwed up. The operation's a problem, so they're all going to look worse individually when we talk about the offensive line. But I have a hard time thinking it's a Chris Strauser problem. Because you know that he's coaching him up on, okay, well, this is how we want to protect the stunt. This is how we want to protect certain things that we're seeing every single week. Like, he's been a head coach, or he's been an offensive line coach in the NFL forever. They know how to, like, protect it. It's a matter of actually, like, getting the communication to the player, and then the player then executing it. I think it's a player thing. I really do. I think it's – I don't know who the name is. Like, Kenyon Green goes out yesterday. Kendrick Green was worse. Maybe it's the center, like, calling the wrong coverages. That's why that's the move I want to see next. Like, let's see, let's try to figure it out. Let's try to figure out what the issue here is. But if Strauser did a good job last year, why would he be doing a bad job this year with a better offensive line? Talented, like, talent level, at least.
Sometimes, and sometimes, not that I'm saying that this is the end-all solution to what you're saying, but sometimes you just have to hear a different voice in the room.
Yeah,
sometimes,
sure.
Sometimes it's just maybe it's you're hearing it from a different source, and maybe there's a slight bit of difference that makes that kind of hits home better with some of the players. Because look, you might have touched on something else as well, and that is we're scouring the league looking for a guard, but we have two centers that can also play guard. To where if you can't find a guard on the open market, can you find if there's centers out there as well? To maybe you get a veteran center that's better at reading coverages, that, you know, has a little less to do, but maybe can be more effective as a guy that can still step in and be capable at this position, and then you've got two possible solutions to your guard problem.
That's just a lot to happen in the middle of the year. Like, that's my fear. You definitely got to try. I'm not saying that you can't try. I'm just saying that governor that is this offensive line and pass protection of CJ Stroud is like, again, the killer bee's telling you things that you're going to think about a month, 2 months later. We noticed in week one, like, this offensive line is not great. We think that this offensive line could be the thing that holds back the Houston Texans offense. It is very difficult to fix that in the middle of the season. 713-780-3776. Let's go back out to the HRMP listener line. Jesse, you're in the hive of the bees. What's up, Jesse?
Hey, Jeremy. First of all, I just want to say I met your brother-in-law from Montana last weekend.
Oh, cool, okay. Guy. Yeah.
But
hey, Jesse.
Also, yeah, I just wanted to comment real quick on, you know, CJ and the line. It's just crazy how we could have one of the best run blocking in the league and one of the worst passing. You know, the saving grace last night with CJ, you know, he knew that he was going to be attacked, and he's already looking to run and getting at least 4-7 yards. But, you know, he is getting that PTSD. Like, as soon as he gets the ball, he knows he's getting under pressure. You can tell he's not even really reading well because he's thinking about the guys about to come sack him. And I'm really scared that he's about to be David Card.
Yeah, appreciate the call, Jesse. Thank you.
Hey, Jesse, I'm here. Same thing. But at the same time, everybody should be worried about it because it's your biggest asset and it's your franchise. It's everything. And the fact that before it gets to David Carr level, it's already gotten way too far. The fact that he took eight sacks last night is already way too far on top of all the sacks he had to lead the league coming into. And the fact that we saw a change in his performance and we've seen his inability to get through his progressions because of the fact that the minute he gets his hands on the football, he's already hitting the panic button in his mind knowing someone's about to get on my ass.
Yeah, I agree with Jesse. Like, you can see CJ Stroud react to what has been a heavily pressured quarterback over the last 3 weeks. And he's been able to, you know, he's been hit or miss on being able to handle it. Like, against the Colts at home, he did a pretty good job against it. Last night, he did not. 2 weeks ago, he did not. Road game, home game, is that a factor? I don't know. But, yeah, I'm starting to get worried about that, too, because you see him miss some throws that he's normally making. You see him maybe a little slower with the progressions. Maybe you see him take a little peek down to see where the pressure's at as opposed to going through his progression. So I am worried about that, too, Jesse. I am worried that CJ, and even if it's not long term, because I mean, CJ Stroud has like a really good head to him. Like, he's got, you know, he's got the demeanor, he's got the attitude. David Carr was the last one to show up, first one to leave. Like, CJ Stroud's going to, it might not fix it, but CJ Stroud's going to bust his butt to try to fix it. I trust that about CJ Stroud, that he's going to work hard to try to fix it. Whether or not it gets fixed is, quite frankly, up to the offensive line.
But you know where it also
is. But I'm not necessarily worried about it long term. I'm worried about it short term in terms of the, like,
right,
the reaction to him being pressured so much.
But you know what else is the telltale sign that it's gone too far and it's really even more of an issue is when he starts to show it emotionally. Because he doesn't want to show up his teammates. But you could tell on several occasions over the last 2 weeks, and specifically last night, that it got too far for him. Like, he wasn't trying to literally point a finger and show someone up, but
yeah,
he was visibly really, really upset.
Yeah, you could see it. You could read it. The body. I mean, you're reading body languages too. Yeah, he was visibly frustrated. 713-780-ESPN. We'll continue talking about the offensive line issues. A lot of reaction on this, and we'll get to the Bobby Slowik too. His whole responsibility in this, and what did you think of Bobby Slowik's play calling from a night ago? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.
You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Someone texting in saying Jason Kelce. I would love it, but they don't have a chance at Jason
Kelce.
That
dude is loving life right now. He is rolling in money.
Yeah, he's rolling in money. He's doing that Buffalo Wild Wings commercial. I think that one's kind of funny. He's like, I already have a brother. Wait, where is he? And he's like, hey, good point.
He's doing that. He's doing Cheerios and cereal. He's doing ESPN. ESPN hired him already. You know, and the podcast is killing it for millions of dollars. Yeah, he doesn't need any return to football.
0179, need to move Howard back to left guard. Signed by Terry to right tackle. Tunsil left tackle. Howard left guard. Scruggs center. Mason right guard. Back Terry right tackle. I don't
Bakhtiari know. Bakhtiari is a lifetime left tackle.
Yeah, I don't really like that idea. Last text, Slowik rarely throws it deep. He did last night. What happened to 50-yard completion? Hey, say more, 8115. Who did he complete it to? Throw it deep more. But I think Slowik, where he can help this offensive line, rollouts. Play action whenever the running game is going well, more quick passes, some more screens, and then hopefully you get the defense on the hills and they're not able to get to the quarterback as well. Slowik absolutely can help the protection of the offensive line.
I've seen it happen. I mean, I saw it when Rodgers was a Packer. He couldn't move. The offensive line was completely obliterated with injuries, and all they did was go into the pistol, and all they did was move the pocket, and all they did was buy time to get throws off, and it works. It works, and there is a method to the madness to be able to execute that and get the job done, but it just doesn't seem like, for whatever, conceptually or within it doesn't fit within his ideas for the plays he wants. I don't know what it is, but it's hard for me to believe that they haven't done like a deep dive into how to buy more time for him.
Yeah, he's got to do it though. Like, even if it doesn't fit into what they got to do, the best coaches are the ones that can coach with the talent that they have. Just asking a question, but does this boil down to Tunsil and him not having to practice through preseason? Does that characteristic boil over to the other offensive linemen? Look, Larry Tunsil was your best lineman. I think that they take a lot of stuff because he is their best offensive lineman. I get annoyed that he doesn't help C.J. Stroud up. I know that he doesn't give up a whole lot of sacks, but he gave up a sack yesterday just over there like kneeling down next to him. It's like, get up and help him up, dude. You just allowed the sack. That's stuff that annoys me. It bothers me. Like, the best teams are the ones that are there to help their teammates get up. Like, even C.J. Stroud, Joe Mixon got popped the other day. Stroud jogs over there and helps up Joe Mixon. Shaq Mason, not one of their best offensive linemen. He's over there helping up Stroud. Kenyon Green's their worst offensive lineman. He's helping up Stroud. Kenyon Green will sprint 10 yards behind the play whenever Mixon got hit, helps Joe Mixon up. So, like, yes, those guys stink, and yes, I'd rather have the better player, but that little stuff kind of bothers me.
And you know, you're a body language guy too. I mean, with that in mind, it does make you start to wonder about what's going on, because you see it all over the field. I mean, the linemen, a lot of times, also on good plays, they're running down the field to make sure after a good play they're picking up the tight end, the wide receiver, the running back. It's something that's just an unwritten rule that's done in the NFL. And so, you know, look, obviously everything's going to be hyper scrutinized at this point as well. But the fact is that there's a lot to question right now.
Yeah, I mean, I won't rule it out. I don't think it's an issue, but I won't completely rule it out, because that stuff does kind of take a toll. And like, especially the offensive line, like, they're supposed to be so cohesive. A lot of times you have an offensive line that just plays well together, and they're not the most talented, but they can protect. Like the Texans offensive line last year, a little bit, they played well together. They were not the most talented.
But Jeremy, on that point, I mean, how can you not, you know, want to do those kind of things if you want to be on a team, because the guy covers your rear end more than anybody. Mm-hmm. When you're bad, and obviously as good as they've been in the running game, the passing game has been so brutal, yet he still finds a way, and all last year he did it, or a majority, and to this point this season, he's done it to where he's made you look better than you are, and you're not going to go pick his ass up after you're partly responsible for getting him knocked down?
Don't tell me about it. I'm with you on that. 8532, coaches don't play. Players need to execute better. I think it's a combination of all of it, but yes, I would agree. 3283, serious question. What is wrong with Kenyon Green? Is he officially a bust? Yeah,
yeah,
I think we can go ahead and label him the B word. Mm-hmm. He is a giant B word. Bust. Should have drafted Kyle Hamilton. 713-780-3776. What did you make of the Bobby Slowick decision? Down by 4, 9 minutes left to play. They're down by 4, 9 minutes left to play, 2nd and 7, and Bobby Slowick draws up his favorite play. He draws up a fade to C.J. Stroud. You're down by 4 with 9 minutes to play, critical spot in the game. You're deep into Jet territory. What does the genius and the big brain on Bobby draw up? He draws up a fade to the quarterback. Joe Mixon's rolling out of the pocket, throwing off his back foot to your quarterback in one of the bigger plays in that entire game yesterday.
I can tell you this. From the minute they got in the Wildcat, I had a what the hell are they doing moment. And that is thinking that you're just telling the Jets defense that as good as you've been with Mixon, you're going to take all reason to doubt or question what they're going to do out of the equation, and you're just going to give it to Joe Mixon off the snap in the shotgun and let him go. So I was already hyper on the edge of my seat, critical, going, what the hell are they doing? When he wound up to throw that football, I was like, oh my God, he's throwing. And then when I realized it was CJ, I don't care if you thought he was interfered with. What the hell are you doing?
I think like toddlers draw up that play on Madden. I don't even know if that's a play on Madden.
But
these
you
days.
Do it with a stick in the dirt when Unbelievable. You're like 9.
Like, and it's one thing if you do that like late first quarter. Like we saw something on tape that we think that the Jets are prone to with this specific look. Okay, like I can listen to it early in a game. You're still kind of, you know, feeling each other out. But you're doing it in the fourth quarter, down by 4, 9 minutes left to play on a 2nd and 7. That is not the time for that. I don't mind the Wildcats so much if Mixon's running it. I don't mind Mixon running the ball.
I just don't like that you're like kind of giving your hand away of what you're going to do.
Well, he didn't, did he?
Well, no, he didn't. And that made it, like I said, that made it worse. But at the same time, most cases when you see that, you tell the defense, we're going to do something in the run game, whether you run him down to the edge or if he's looking just for a hole to hit. That was even worse.
That was the worst call that I've seen this year. I don't want to say like this great, huge, worst call I've ever seen in my life, because I've seen some bad calls. That's the worst one I've seen this year. That was unbelievable, especially given the game situation.
That's exactly right. And the other one that actually piling on, and I'm a fan of Slowick, and I've been a fan of Slowick since he's gotten here enough that I haven't wanted to find it need to pile on. But the other thing that really chapped my ass was after you got the penalty and the 15-yarder, that got you deeper into the red zone, you just ran it into the line twice and then put yourself in a tough situation on third down anyway. And I'm like, can't we just get a little more spice into the offense and move something out?
You saw a little Wildcat throw. How's that for spice?
No.
I'd rather see a couple of halfback dives and then Joe Mixon throwing off his back foot as he rolls out to his right. Like, I actually thought that he got away from the running game a little bit too much yesterday.
Joe
I know that. I know they didn't have much success in the second half running the ball. I think it was 7 carries for 15 yards. But at the same time, like, I think I'm just going to try to allow Joe Mixon to wear on that defense, and then hopefully at some point the dam breaks. Because the way the passing game was going, like, I'd rather be just running the ball and feeding Joe Mixon.
He was so freaking good in the first half. With a lot of times, he made something out of nothing. And he was so effective that if you listen to him in the post game, as much as he loves being here and he loves his teammates, and he loves the situation, he's always been so hyper-positive, he actually asked the media, how many times did I touch it in the second half? And we did get away, and he was kind of soft-selling. He's like, we did kind of get away from the run. It's like, he was your horse in the first half, and you just basically just kind of dry-docked him.
Yeah, yeah. 7 carries, 15 yards in the second half. 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Travis Barker, you're in the Hive of the Bees. What's up, Travis?
Hey, guys. That is the exact reason why I was calling, man. I called last week about some bonehead plays, and that one with the Wildcat was the top bonehead play so far this year. You are inside the 15-yard line. You need to put the ball in the damn end zone. You need to have it in the hands of your best quarterback, throwing it to your best receiver. Any receiver could have actually stopped in the end zone and tried to draw interference with a penalty and put it on the one. But, you don't throw it to your quarterback. Come on, man. This is just ridiculous.
He's not wrong. I mean, I think we're all on the same page there. That's an easy train to jump on board with because they've gotten too cute a lot this year where they just feel like sometimes Bobby in particular just feels like he wants to try the double reverse pitch play or the flea flicker type play when it's not necessary. And a lot of times it doesn't work. This took the cake. This was just, like you said, the timing of it is one thing that really needs to be exploited about the time of the game you're doing it. But the fact that you're trying to complete a pass to your quarterback, he's already been put in harm's way enough. He's not the kind of guy that's going to use wide receiver technique to try and draw something, even if he is being held. It was just so preposterous that you're like, literally, what the hell are they doing?
I even have a tough time calling it preposterous because there was nothing professional about that. That was awful by Bobby Slowick. Bad as the joke. 713-780-3776. What did you think of that Bobby Slowick play call? Let's get to the two questionable plays from yesterday's game, too. The calls by the officials. Illegal contact by Stingley, and then the overturn of the touchdown. Garrett Wilson, unbelievable grab. But the overturn, was that clear and obvious? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, a word from our good friend, Doc Linville. Doc Linville, best in the business at the NeoGraft procedure. But hey, let me tell you this. A little side note that people might not know is Doc Linville does a ton of stuff really, really well. He does plastic surgery. He does Botox. He does all kinds of different augmentation surgeries. He can fix things if you want to get your six-pack going again. There's ways with even creams and things that he can get things done for you. But the fact is he's dedicated to the people of Houston. And the one thing that he's told me over and over again, he goes, I just want people in Houston to know there's a solution when you're losing your hair. And it's not going to L.A. or flying to all these exotic places to get these expensive doctors to try something extravagant. He does it right here in the Med Center between the NeoGraft procedure and the fact that he does PRP treatments, which just strengthens and kind of thickens up your hair. He can take care of it right here at home. And he's because you listen to us and he's dedicated to our station. If you go to the website right now at 975hair.com and sign up for an appointment, it'll cost you nothing. And there's no obligation, no signing on a dotted line, no money out of pocket. You just get a one-on-one consultation where you can ask questions, get answers, have everything explained to you, and understand that there is a solution to your hair loss. Whether you're thinning or it's already gone, both of those the treatments and procedures can take care of what you need. How do I know? Because I had them done. And they're phenomenal. And they work. And you get your hair back. So I'm here to tell you from personal experience, you need to check it out. Because it really, you got nothing to lose and all your hair to gain. All you got to do is go to 975hair.com right now. Set up a free consultation. Go in, ask questions, get answers. Have them explain everything to you. And then you'll be able to go home and start contemplating if it's something that you want to consider. If you do consider doing it, I'm here to tell you, you should. Granado's done it. I've done it. We can't stop saying great things about Doc and his staff because it works. That's why we're talking as great as we are. He's a good dude. He's a phenomenal dude. But at the same time, what really is the main thing here is he gets results and gets your hair back. Check him out today. Go to 975hair.com.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What are your thoughts on Derek Stingley's illegal contact play, which kept the drive alive?
I thought it was a bad call. I give credit to Herb Street for two plays later, still going back to it to show that it was a bad call and to question the call that was made. Because whether you, the people that were out there saying that we got jobbed by the officials and that's why we lost, and that's just a complete homer stance that's way too out of my realm.
Did you see it?
What?
Did you see people saying that they lost because of the officials?
Oh, yeah.
Did you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, funny. I saw it on Twitter. I saw it in multiple places that we got jobbed by the officials. I'm like, nah, you really didn't. But
they might have got a whistle or a flag go against them, but they didn't lose the game because the
one
officials.
Of them they brought up was the CJ play that he got interfered with, and it was really blatant.
Yeah,
I could see the blatant. Grab a little bit, but yeah. It wasn't something that was sold enough or legitimate enough to be a call. The Stingley play I thought was brutal. I thought it was brutal simply because what it turned into be and how that turned into points as well when they extended the drive. But I thought as late as it came to and just looking at it multiple times, I thought it was a horrible call.
Yeah, that was the worst call in the game, I thought. I didn't think that that was illegal contact at all. I thought Stingley was fine, legal. Like, they're always kind of touching each other. He's not yanking. He's not at all impeding the progress of the route. He's a defensive back, too,
to where he knows exactly how he can get away with something. So his arm was kind of chicken wing tucked in, and his hand did kind of cup CJ's inside elbow.
Cupped.
But they're not gonna call that.
No, I thought that was an atrocious call. Now, what about the second touchdown to Garrett Wilson? Unbelievable play by Garrett Wilson.
Those were the three that were on the table for everybody that had problems with the officials. I had a personal problem with it simply because I'm trying to understand it. Because Malik Nabers had a similar play, I think it was last week.
I didn't see the Nabers play.
Yeah, and they did not rule it a catch. So I'm thinking about this, and I'm going, okay, well, it's 2 feet down. If it's the same foot, does that come into play too?
No, it's got to be both feet.
Because
that was the Pickens play the other day, remember? Remember Pickens went up, tapped his toe twice, the same toe twice,
yeah.
But the other foot never landed. He went out of bounds and complete pass.
So if
it's got to be both feet.
But that's the same leg.
Not 2 feet.
Wasn't
that
the same
feet.
Leg? It was yeah, the Pickens, same leg.
It didn't count. Pickens, he got overturned on
review.
That's
what I'm saying. Wasn't it also the same leg last night with Garrett Wilson? Because it was the leg, it was the leg that tapped, that made contact with the ground. And then he went back up in the air.
I see what you're saying.
And then it's the shin, not the foot, but at the same time, it's still the same leg.
I see what you're saying. But I guess that it's two separate things because it's the shin and it's the foot.
Because it's worth questioning, right, if it's the same leg.
There were some people that thought his right toe might have hit before his knee hit out of bounds, and it does not. Like, his left knee clearly hits out of bounds before his right toe hits in play in the end zone. But I guess the shin would be different than the foot. I think that's fair, too. I think that is fair. Because if you were to make this catch, like, you say you're starting to slide to the ground, like, near the boundary,
yeah.
And you make the catch on one foot, and then your knee immediately, like, drives into the ground in play, that should be a catch.
But they said the knee is greater than 2 feet.
Right, so is the shin. The shin is equal.
See,
that one
I didn't know because I'm like, that's why it's all up in the air to me for interpretation because of the fact that I'm like, it's the same leg. It's really close to the same foot. And the fact that I get it, that even Ulbrich was saying that he was telling the official when watching it on replay, I mean, that's too great of a play for you to not let that stand or to overturn whatever it was to give it a touchdown.
Yeah.
I'm like, that has nothing to do with it. It was an amazing catch. It's the catch of the year in the NFL, regardless of whether it was a touchdown or not. I just had a hard time believing it was a touchdown.
Yeah. The issue that I have really, because if gun to my head, like watching the replay over and over and over again, like if you just told me, is that a catch or is that not a catch? I probably lean catch because their thing was the whole shin was down before the knee hit out of bounds. And based on the camera angle you see, I can see that. Now, if you let it play out, the ball's kind of like it's borderline loose.
It moved, he shifted it, yes.
And then like the way that his arm angle is angled, like are you telling me that ball, like the ground didn't help the ball there? Like I have a hard time believing that. My biggest argument here is I don't know how in the world this is clear and obvious. Like the camera's at what, the 15-yard line? The 10-15 yard line? So the camera's at an angle. You don't have a down the boundary camera. If you had a down the boundary camera, that would really help you. But if you don't have a camera that's down the boundary, you're looking at a camera from the 15-yard line that's at an angle, like a 45-degree angle, and then you're making a call down the line. How in the world is that clear and obvious? And then the fact that the ball's kind of rolling, maybe rolling, that does not meet the requirements, in my opinion, of clear and obvious. Great catch. Gun to my head. I think it's a catch. Is it clear and obvious after it was ruled incomplete on the field? Ain't no way in my mind.
No, and here's the thing, too. I think that not that I'm legitimizing anything that and how they got to their deductive reasoning, but I think they were so focused on the feet that there wasn't enough attention paid to where the ball started, where it ended up, and the fact that it did move slightly as he got it from under his armpit to extended when he hit the ground. I thought that they didn't look at that. I was betting they didn't look at it at all. I think
right.
they were just focused on the
I'm
leg.
With you. I'm with you.
Yeah, and then the other thing is this is the second Thursday night that we're talking about this with all the money spent and all the broadcasts from the national level. Why isn't every single boundary line have a stationary camera?
Yeah.
You don't need to have someone man it. You can do the replay in the truck. But the fact is, every single boundary line, the goal line, the sidelines, the back of the end zone, it should all have stationary cameras dedicated for this very reason.
Put it in the pylon. Like, we've seen the technology. Yeah. It's in the pylon. We see it, like, some games that it's in the pylon. I completely agree. And again, look, this is not the reason the Texans lost the game. I think it was a catch, but to me, it did not meet the requirements of clear and obvious. I was shocked that they overturned it. Blaine said one shin counts as 2 feet, though. Agreed, but are we 1,000% sure that the shin is completely inbounds before the knee hits out of bounds on a camera from the 15-yard line that's looking at a 45-degree shot at the play whenever it's on the outside boundary of the end zone? I don't think that we do. 5657, what if the receiver catches it and hops 5 times on 1 foot and then goes out of bounds? That would be incomplete. It's got to be both feet, the left and the right feet. For Mabe, should be his 2 club feet. 5798, sorry, Sean. I didn't think the Wilson touchdown was conclusive. I'm surprised the original call didn't stick.
That's the biggest thing that you pointed out. The fact is that if there's any, if it's inconclusive or you just don't have definitive, then you go with the way it was called on the field. And the fact that if it was called on the field incomplete, then it should stay incomplete. Because we obviously have just pointed out in a short period of time a bunch of question marks and whether they were looking at one thing or the other. That was enough in itself to say if you didn't have something that just stood out and goes, oh, yeah, it's a no-brainer. Because in my gut right away, I was like you. I was like, they're going to overturn this. I could just feel
you
it.
Thought so? I didn't think they would.
I thought that they would of the fact that it's a massive catch and the home team – And everybody was buzzing about it. That they feel that buzz, too, when they're talking about it. I just felt like it was going to be overturned. But I had more questions than answers watching the replay.
Cap says Stingley call is one of those calls that make people think the NFL is rigged. The Texans had most of the money in Vegas. The Texans had – Vegas was very happy with the result yesterday. If you want to put the tinfoil hat on, that's up to you. All right, time to pick a bone with D'Amico Ryans. I have a bone to pick with the head coach. 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.